What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jeb Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we have a brand new UFC event this weekend. How do we follow up the second worst, not the worst pay-per-view of all time? How about two straight UFC Apex events? That's right, UFC Apex 110 goes down this Saturday. You get David Onama and Steve Garcia in the main event, and Waldo Cortez Acosta and Ante Delage in the co-main event. Onama and Garcia in the main event. So some very underwhelming fights, but I think the main event's good delivery. I think that Steve Garcia and David Onama are going to surprise a lot of casuals at how good they are. We have your entire 13 fight card predictions coming at you on today's episode as well. Saturday night's main event. That's right. We have another WWE PLE going down this Saturday. Should be pretty interesting. I'll be dropping my predictions for the four currently announced matchups, and I'll discuss what I think is going to happen in the future for the WWE after this event. As well, we have our Week 9 quick picks. We had a rough week last week in fantasy and predictions. It was bad. I'm so glad I didn't actually record it because it was really bad. But we are going to not talk about bad things because we're only going to look up. And what we do have to look up to is some new updated UFC rankings. No new fights have really been announced at all as of late. They've been talking about the Paramount deal, but we don't know any fights yet. But what we do know is the UFC rankings have updated after UFC 321. So without further ado, let's look at the updates and see what it means for each of the fighters that it has impacted. Starting us off in the women's divisions, women's bantamweight, no updates, but we do have a matchup between the number three and number four ranked women this upcoming Saturday, so we will be discussing that on today's episode. But other than that, no real changes. There isn't really any big movement, really, I'd say, but Melissa Croden, she recently won 2 weeks ago in Canada. She's getting another matchup coming up. I definitely think that she could be someone who could jump into the rankings, and if she comes into the UFC two straight finishes, she'll be on everyone's radar. But in terms of official updates, nothing whatsoever. Now, women's flyweight, similar situation. There have been no real updates whatsoever. But with Manon Fiorot jumping to the number one spot last week, I think it's a real telling thing that she's at one and Natalia Silva's at two in terms of what happens with Zhang Weili and Valentina Shevchenko, because the outcome of that matchup is going to really determine the future of the women's divisions as a whole for flyweight and strawweight, even for bantamweight, because, you know, Valentino beats Zhang Weili, like, there's genuinely, like, no one. She may have to fight a super fight against Kayla Harrison or Amanda Nunes, so we'll see what happens there, but no updates at flyweight. As for strawweight, Mackenzie Dern, and we'll just incorporate women's pound for pound as well in this, is your new strawweight champion. She is now ranked at number six on the women's pound for pound. And by the way, she was unranked coming in. That's right. Imagine going from unranked to the number six pound for pound woman on the planet. I absolutely love it. Zhang Weili is now ranked at number one, although it doesn't really make sense why she's ranked if she's leaving the division. Tatiana Suarez is at two. Virna Jandidova drops two spots to number three. Jan Chionin to four, and Amanda Lemos to five. Good work, Mackenzie Dern. Very good work. And with Tatiana Suarez recently picking up a win over Amanda Lemos, it's evident to see that she will actually be the next contender, I presume, because I don't know the time span on when Zhang Weili will fight next. But from what I can assume, they'll want to get Mackenzie Dern a fight in early 2026. She can defend against Tatiana Suarez. As for Virna Jandidova, Jan Chionin, Amanda Lemos, you're just going to matchmake those three with women outside of the top five. That's all I can say for that. Women's pound for pound, Juliana Pena drops two spots to eight. No idea why she's even in the rankings. Erin Blanchfield drops one spot to nine. Poor Erin can't even get a fight. Virna Jandidova drops two spots to 11. Tatiana Suarez to 12. Rose Namajunas is at 13. No idea how Rose is still in the pound for pound. Jan Chowin to 14. And they just throw Caitlin Vieira in at 15. Good for her. So you're actually going to see a woman in the top 15 pound for pound in the entire UFC fighting this weekend. Her name's Caitlin Vieira, if you've never heard of her, because I would be surprised if you hadn't. Jumping to the men's heavyweight division, Shamil Gaziev passes Tai Tuivasa from 11 to 12 for some reason, and Walter Walker following his fourth straight round one knee bar, or ankle lock, whatever you want to call it, his submission streak is insane, jumps from 15 to 14, Talashan Teixeira down to 15. What I think is next for Talashan Teixeira is we have some heavyweights that recently won on the Contender Series. I think he should welcome one of them. If not, there's always the option you could run him versus Mick Parkin I'm not opposed to that whatsoever. As for Walter Walker, he called out Hamdi Abdul-Hawab, and Hamdi Abdul-Hawab was actually cut from the UFC this past weekend despite winning. That's how poorly he performed. So if it's up to me, I got him versus Marcin Tybura at 10. I think he has earned a shot to climb the rankings. People will say it's too soon, but in the heavyweight division, when you're getting wins like this, you just got to give someone a shot. In terms of Tai Tuivasa, he won't be available the 2026. He's someone that is going to be fighting, you know, he's going to be fed to a young up-and-coming contender. And as for Shamil Gaziev, well, the top 10 awaits you, my friend. Shamil Gaziev is everyone's goat, if you didn't know, of the heavyweight division. As for Aspinall, Gon, Volkov, Halton Almeida, no movement whatsoever. But like I said, number 6 ranked Waldo Cortez Acosta, number 9 ranked Ante Delija fighting the co-main event this weekend. We're going to be talking about later on today's episode, has some interesting implications. Light heavyweight, we have some movement as Khalil Roundtree Jr. jumps up one spot, blasting Han Blachowicz. Very interesting, despite the fact that Kian actually has a fight coming up and Khalil doesn't. Osmat Mirzakhanov jumps 3 spots to 7 following his victory over the now ranked number 10, Alexander Rakic, who himself drops 3 spots. Azamat, moving him to 7 shows that he's going to be fighting someone above him. That will either be Jamal Hill, that will either be Khalil Roundtree Jr., that will either be the loser of Jiří Procházka and Carlos Ubrík. We'll have to see. If it's up to me, Azamat versus Khalil Roundtree Jr., I think it's the perfect fight. I think that's the fight you run next. It just makes sense to me, and that's what you do. As for Alexander Rakic, he's got some options. Zhang Mingyang, Alonzo Medifield, Johnny Walker, someone who's unranked. He needs a pick-me-up win. He needs to fight someone not in the top 5, for goodness sakes, and he needs to fight someone who's not going to knock him out in round number 1. So, tough stuff for Alexander Rakic, but Aslan Mirzakhanov, now ranked number 7, undefeated, getting another knockout in the UFC. I absolutely love it. As for middleweight, there have been no changes whatsoever. There's literally nothing to talk about. I don't know what's going on at middleweight. Do we have any big fights coming up that I can tell you guys about? Marvin Vittori at number 14 is taking on unranked Bruno Ferreira. That's it. Middleweight's had a crazy year, to say the least. So we'll see how 2026 treats it. Welterweight, lots of big fights coming up. Literally, everyone besides Shafkar Akhmonov at 3, Kamaru Usman at 5, Joaquin Buckley at 7, Colby Covington at 10, Gilbert Burns at 11, Jeff Neal at 12, Dan Rodriguez at 13, and Mike Mallett at 15. Everyone else in the top 15, which I listed a number of fighters, but over like 60% of the top 15 have matchups coming up. It's a very exciting time. Lightweight, not a lot to talk about. I mean, obviously we have news that Armin Sarukian is taking on Dan Hooker. We also have news that Islam Makhachev is moving up in weight. But other than that, nothing really. Not much to go off of. No Michael Chandler news, no Patty Pimblett news, no Justin Gaethje news. Very interesting time for lightweight. For featherweight, you got a big matchup coming up this weekend with the number 12 and number 13 guy. That's all we got. For bantamweight, the final division with changes. Umar Nurmagomedov jumps Sean O'Malley to the number 1 spot. Find that very telling. I really do. Sean obviously should fight Corey Sandhagen next. And the next title challenger in December, Petr Yan, is ranked at number 3. I find that very interesting. But Umar, at the end of the day, is 19-1. Like, this kid is insanely good. So I love it. And he wants a title shot next. If not, then Song Yadong versus Amin Zahabi. Like, we got lots of options there. Flyweight, no changes whatsoever. And pound for pound, very interesting. Tom Aspinall remains ranked at number 9. I don't know what they're going to do with the rematch. I think they should try and get it booked in December. If not, I don't know what to expect in 2026 with this new Parabout deal. So we'll have to see, but certainly a very interesting time in the world of heavyweights. I will say it is a disastrous time to be a UFC heavyweight, but I'll tell you what else is not a disastrous time, at times I should say, that's being a WWE fan, because this weekend, Saturday night's main event comes to you from Salt Lake City, Utah, and that is right in the main event, Jey Uso versus CM Punk for the vacant World Heavyweight Championship. That's right, this event is centered around CM Punk and Jey Uso, and they have CM Punk on the cover, which makes me think he's not winning the championship, but we'll have to see. As right now, we have 4 matchups to go through. Let's check them out. First up, Dominic Mysterio taking on Penta, taking on Rusev in a triple threat match for the WWE Intercontinental Championship. I love to see Penta getting featured on one of these cards, you know. He's just been kind of in background territory, so I absolutely love that he's not only in a matchup on a PLE, but he's fighting for a belt, which makes it all the better. Rusev, he's been involved in the mix. He keeps getting screwed unintentionally with Dominic Mysterio's ways, and maybe Rusev could submit Penta and Dom loses, but I don't really see it here. I think they're keeping this belt on Dom until they either have him face John Cena at Survivor Series or Finn Balor at a WrestleMania. That's the type of vibe that I'm getting with Dominic Mysterio here, but this could be a fantastic triple threat match. Dominic Mysterio is quickly becoming one of the faces of the WWE, and I'm gonna be honest, give it 5 years, I could see him with the World Heavyweight Championship. He just screams World Heavyweight Championship to me. The fact he was able to separate himself from his father Ray by going more towards this Eddie Guerrero gimmick has been fantastic. As much as you see, you know, like the on screen like feud between father and son, just know they have a great personal relationship from what we've been told as wrestling fans, and Ray is super proud of his son. So Dominic Mysterio over Penta and Rusev, but I'm just happy to see that this belt is on a PLE. Next up, Tiffany Stratton versus Jade Cargill in a singles match for the WWE Women's Championship. I imagine this has to be where Jade Cargill wins it. I mean, they've been doing Tiffany Stratton so dirty on her run with the championship since she won it in January. I mean, it has been really bad. Really bad. She has been feuding with the same women, Nia Jax, for literally all year. A bit of Charlotte Flair. She's been going with Jade Cargill since SummerSlam, and she just can't get anyone new. They did this little filler feud with Trish Stratus, and you know that was all right, but she's just never really been able to get out going. And if she wins here, I legit just think they're gonna keep this belt on her until WrestleMania. But you've been building up Jade Cargill. She finally turned heel. If she wins the belt here, you can have Bianca Belair return at the Royal Rumble or something and win and face her at WrestleMania. It writes itself. So I think Tiffany Stratton should move on to the Women's United States Championship, try and help that division flourish, and now's the time to give Jade Cargill the WWE Women's Championship. Next up, Cody Rhodes versus Drew McIntyre in a singles match for the Undisputed WWE Championship. Forgot this was on here. To be honest, I know they've been on SmackDown every week, but it's just weird to think that this is not going to be main eventing, I presume, over CM Punk and Jey Uso. I assume that since CM Punk is on the cover, they're going to give him and Jey Uso the, you know, main event. But to be honest, I don't even know. You know, Drew McIntyre and Cody Rhodes still going at it since WrestlePalooza over a month and a half later. And, you know, I would love to say Drew McIntyre wins here, but I just think that Cody is just not dropping here. I know there have been people talking about how now that, you know, I don't think this is going to be clean. First off, let me say that. But I know people have been saying that, you know, Cody Rhodes is going to take some time off. Cody Rhodes is going to get screwed by Randy Orton. I could see Randy getting involved here, but unintentionally costing Cody Rhodes the championship. But that could be an option. But if anything, I just don't know. I just don't really know. I don't know what angles they're going to go with, but if you really want to go for shock factor here, you could give Drew McIntyre the belt, but the odds they change both of their flagship titles on a Peacock-only stream Saturday night's main event, super rare. So, going to go with Cody Rhodes to retain, but I'm very curious to see where this goes from here, as the word is still that it is going to be a team of basically good guys versus the Vision for Survivor Series, so maybe you'll see Cody Rhodes on that team. I don't know, but I'm very interested to see what happens here. I can't really give you a, you know, official prediction because all I can go off is guessing. So my guessing prediction, Cody Rhodes retains. Which brings us to our main event, but something tells me they'll add another matchup on SmackDown. Could be the United States Championship, Ilya Dragunov versus Damian Priest, or Ilya Dragunov versus Aleister Black. Any of the case, if Ilya Dragunov's involved, he's retaining. Now, main event. So main event, Jey Uso versus CM Punk in the main event. I'm a little torn. Little torn on what to go here, because a part of me, they've been teasing this Jey Uso heel turn. They really have. And, you know, I think it makes more sense to honestly put it on Jey Uso, because what we've been really doing with CM Punk is building him up, inevitably winning it. He finally won the belt at SummerSlam. Seth Rollins cashes in. And I think here, you see Jey Uso use a dirty tactic to beat CM Punk. CM Punk should win the Rumble, in my opinion. I know they want to go with Sami Zayn, but I think CM Punk winning the big belt at WrestleMania would be such a good feeling. He deserves an official Night 2 main event, I might add. So I think that you just give Jey Uso the belt. He's a great filler champion with Seth Rollins being injured. I think having Bron Breakker, LA Knight, a lot of options with those guys to feud. That's just my opinion, but if it's up to me, I'm booking Jey Uso to beat CM Punk. I just think that's what you should do. Plus, there's always this thing where the person on the cover of the poster literally never wins. I swear that's always the case. So, I don't know. We're going to go with Jey Uso, but at the end of the day, who do I want to win? If I'm being honest, I would want Dominic Mysterio, Tiffany Stratton, Drew McIntyre, and CM Punk. But in ideal world, I think you get at least two title changes here. You're going to get guaranteed one, unless the Vision gets involved and costs both CM Punk and Jey Uso. I don't know how that would work. We'll have to see. But Saturday night's main event goes down this weekend. This Saturday specifically should be fun. Now, what's up next, you may ask? Well, how about something we've been talking about literally the last 9 weeks? That is the NFL. And we have some quick picks to hit you guys with. We have some games coming up. They're going to be exciting. They're going to be fun. And we get things going on Thursday. Lamar Jackson is finally back, dude. Oh my gosh, he's been killing me. Been killing me in fantasy. He's been out. He was my all-star. He was my team leader. And him being injured has just cost me. I'm now 4-4 in my big 16-man league. And we're going to need a rally. We are going to need a late season rally to make the playoffs. I think I have like 5 weeks to make the playoffs, which is not a lot of time, if I'm being honest. But in terms of this game, look, I know the Dolphins went out. Gotta win, but Lamar's back. Lamar is back. Plus, the Ravens just beat the Bears without Lamar. So that shows that the team is still capable. In terms of both these teams, they're both only have 2 wins on the year. Dolphins 2-6. Looked good last week, but I mean, that's not saying much looking good against the Browns, if I'm being honest. Now, as for the Ravens, the 2-5, it really sucks, but something tells me with Lamar back, they're going to rally, they're going to get done, and end of the day, big Lamar Jackson fan, give me the Ravens over the Dolphins. They're also minus 450, no shot in picking against them. Next up, the Bengals and the Bears in Cincinnati. Bears are minus 165. Bengals are plus 140. I find that very curious. I really do. Now, the Bengals suffered a horrific loss to the Jets, but this is known with Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco, for some reason, when he's in games, is in shootouts. He just is. Now, he is questionable, and if I find out Jake Browning's starting, I'm immediately switching to the Bears. But for now, with Joe Flacco, the new Joe Shiesty in, and as an underdog, I love the Bengals odds at home. I really do. They've done better at home than on the road. And for the Bears, they're just so volatile. They really are. I mean, they're 4-3, suffered a pretty tough loss to the Ravens last week, and Caleb Williams just can't be trusted. He really can. He cannot be trusted. I think this Bears team is still all over the place. So as of right now, as a plus 140 underdog, I'm going with the Bengals, please. I also have Ja'Marr Chase in a league and Chase Brown and I think a number of players. I have so many players in every league. Next up at noon, Vikings and Lions, and I just can't do it, guys. I can't do it. Sometimes I can admit when my team isn't going to win, and there's just no way the Vikings get it done. I really hope I'm on a compilation where it's like, this guy said the Vikings weren't going to win, and they did, but we've only put up 155 points this year. We've lost 2 straight. We just got blown out by the Chargers on primetime Thursday Night Football. We're not beating the 5-2 Lions coming off of a bye. I mean, this Lions team is nearing plus 100-point differential. They're 3-0 at home. They have been phenomenal. There's just no shot. So, Lions over the Vikings. I wish it wasn't the case, but sad to say, I think it is. So, Lions over the Vikings is my prediction. Next up, we have the Panthers and the Packers. And do I need to elaborate any more on this? I don't really think so. The Packers are going to destroy the Panthers. Panthers are already at plus 700. Packers at minus 200. There's just no shot. Packers are 5-1-1. 3 straight wins. 3-0 at home. They just took it to the Steelers. I mean, this Packers team, I hate to admit it, is looking pretty good. And as for the Panthers, 4-4. Better than they were the last few years. But at the end of the day, they're still the Panthers. Defense is so volatile, going negative every week. So my prediction is the Packers, as much as it pains me. But I don't really think I have any players that I care about in this. No, I have no Panthers, no Packers. So Packers over the Panthers, do whatever you please. Next up, this one's insane. 98% of ESPN has picked the Chargers to defeat the Titans at a minus 500 to plus 380 differential. And it's hard to say why not. Because the Chargers are second in the AFC West. They're 5-3, just blew out my Minnesota Vikings, and they're looking good. And unfortunately, as a Quentin Johnson fantasy owner, it sucks. But the fact that they didn't even pass to Quentin Johnson, and they didn't even really pass to Keenan Allen, but they had Ladd McConkey, they had their new Aronde Gerritsen, I think his name is, the new rookie tight end. You had Vidal going off. I mean, this Chargers team is very sneakily good. And unfortunately, the Titans, now that the Jets have won, are literally the worst team in the league. They are atrocious. 110 points for 1-7, three straight losses, yet to win at home, for goodness sakes. Chargers all day. If the Titans win, it would easily be the biggest upset of the entire season so far. Next noon game, Patriots and Falcons. And Falcons could potentially be a good sneaky underdog prediction here, just to let you guys know, because the Falcons are 50-50 every week. Last week, they were the negative part of a 50-50 performance. Two straight losses now. Kirk Cousins, I started in fantasy for some reason. I thought he'd turn the clock back. He looked so mid, but Penix is back. Their only good player on their team is really Bijan. I guess Drake London when he's eaten, but this Patriots team is the best team in the NFL. 6-2, five straight wins. They've gone just amazing, amazing, amazing. They have a almost 100% point differential. It is almost at 100 points. I think they're about 20 points away. So with Drake May healthy, with the entire team healthy, they don't really even have like set stars. They just have a great coherent coaching system and unit. Give me the Patriots over the Falcons, please. Next noon game, 49ers and the Giants. And Giants are probably going to be on the not picking them after the loss of Cam Scadabo. And they kind of fell apart after that, which I don't blame them. Mind you, they're playing the Eagles as well. But this is now two straight losses. 0-5 on the road has not helped them, but of their two wins, both of them have came at home. Now, as for the 49ers, they are 5-3, did suffer a tough defeat last week, which, I mean, you know, it was a rough game versus the Texans, but they had a lot of opportunities to win. And with Brock Purdy coming back, with George Kittle probably getting back into the swing of things, I'm thinking good things are ahead. Give me the 49ers to win this one. I do have Christian McCaffrey in a league or two. I also have George Kittle as well. Hopefully they pop off. Next up with our final noon game. A lot of noon games. We got Colts and Steelers, and oh my goodness, this Colts team is actually the best team in the league. I forgot, but I mean, this team is insanely talented. 7-1, four straight. Man, it is tough to beat this team. And as for the Steelers, I just watched them fall apart. Fall apart versus the Packers. Two straight losses. Somehow still the best team in the AFC North. They have a +0 point differential. 175 points for 175 points against. But in the battle of Aaron Rodgers versus this number one Colts team, I am not going with him. Daniel Jones has been amazing. Jonathan Taylor might be the MVP this season. And when you have Pittman to throw to, Warren to throw to, Downs to throw to, Pierce to throw to, the weapons are endless, and it has been an amazing season for the Colts. Give me the Colts over the Steelers. I don't think they lose their next game till they play a Chiefs, a Bills, a Ravens type of matchup. After that, we have the Broncos and the Texans closing out our noon slate. And for some reason, the Texans are favorites again against the Broncos team, which has been red hot. Is this 2013 again, 2012, that the Colts and the Broncos are the two best teams in the league? What is going on? But Broncos have been on a tear. They really have. Top of the AFC West, five straight wins now. Their two losses have came on the road. Do want to note that. And for the Texans, of their three wins, two of them have came at home. Texans are coming off that big win over the 49ers, but Broncos just blew out the Cowboys. Their momentum is at an all-time high. They had everyone looking good. All right, Cortland Sutton was even the main man on offense. That's how freaking good they were balling. Now, for the Texans, they've just been kind of whatever all around, and if I'm being honest, I think this Broncos run continues to six straight wins. Give me the Broncos over the Texans. Next up, Jaguars visiting the Raiders, and this is my favorite pick of the week, guys. Raiders at +135 at home. Both teams coming off a bye. I love the Raiders here. I really do. Big Ashton Gentry guy, of course, and I just think This is a great time for the Raiders to pick up their third win of the year. They've gone 1-2 at home, 1-3 on the road, so no real way to find out anything. But for the Jags, I will say, of their three defeats, 3-2 at home, 1-1 on the road. They're also on a two-game losing streak. So Jaguars have a lot to work here if they're going to want to make the wild card. And as for the Raiders, I think it's just not finishing as one of the bottom three or four teams in the AFC. So Raiders over the Jaguars, we got to pick some underdogs here and there. I love it, and I'm going to be honest, I need Ashton Jeanty to have like the greatest game of his life. I really need to win in fantasy football. Next 305 game, Saints visiting the Rams, and I thought that the Titans being at only a 2% picking rate versus the Colts was bad. The Rams are minus 1,600 favorites. 99.8% of people have picked them over the Saints, who are plus 800. Yeah, I can see it. Saints are really bad. I knew the Saints were going to be really bad this year, but they're really bad. 0-3 on the road, three-game losing streak, 1-7, easily the worst team in the NFC and debatable for worst team in the entire NFL. So Saints, no shot on picking them. Rams have won two straight. They're 5-2. They've been playing great football even without Puka Nacua rested and freshly off a bye. Puka might be back, but I know Kyron Williams is ready to go. I know Matt Stafford's ready to get it done. So Rams over the Saints, that's my pick. Then 3:25. The fact this isn't the Sunday night football game is insane to me. Chiefs visiting the Bills. For goodness sake, the Chiefs visiting the Bills. Now, this could go either way. I'm going to be honest, these teams are forever going to flip-flop. But a little thing I've seen over the last few years is that the Chiefs own the Bills in the playoffs. The Bills usually will edge out the Chiefs in the regular season. So Bills, 5-2, coming off a nice win last week. We're able to get it done in dominant fashion. James Cook having a great week. Josh Allen playing phenomenal. And for the Chiefs, you know, they've been rebounding. Three straight wins after starting 2-3, actually, it was. Yeah, it suffers a really rough start to the season, but they're almost at a plus 100 point differential. They've gone 1-2 on the road. Well, so much better at home than on the road. And for the Bills, they've been better at home than on the road by one game. So give me the Bills over the Chiefs. In terms of players, I guess I have Mahomes and Kelsey in some leagues for the Bills. Don't have Josh Allen this year. I had Josh Allen last year in some leagues, and I kind of just like to mix it up every year and then. So Bills over the Chiefs, that's what I'm going to go with. Plus the Bills at home are plus 115 underdogs. I always love when home teams are underdogs in close matchups. With that, we get into our Sunday night football game. Seahawks visiting the Commanders, and Seahawks are minus 170 on the road against the Commanders, who are plus 145. This Seahawks team is good. Okay, this is a very well put together Seahawks team, assembled team, I will call them. 5-2, two straight games. They have gone 3-0 on the road this season. And they're playing this Commanders team, which just can't recapture the magic of last year. After starting 3-2, they've lost their last three. They have not looked that good. And, you know, despite getting of their three wins, two at home, I just don't see it. I really don't. You know, they lost to the Chiefs 28-7. Okay, but they were blown up by the Commanders 44-22. The Bears beat them on a game-winning field goal. I have no idea how this team beat the Chargers in the early October. I genuinely don't. Now, as for the Seahawks, Jackson Smith and Jigba is a dog. You are slowly seeing Zach Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker battle for the backfield, and in the fallout is whatever defense they're playing. So as much as I will probably be starting Jaden Daniels and Deebo Samuel more over Seahawks players, because I think I only have JSN in one or two leagues, I am going to go with the Seahawks to win. Which brings us to our Monday Night Football matchup. Cardinals visiting the Cowboys. Very fun matchup here. Cardinals coming in off a bye. And this Cowboys team, who is 3-4-1, I don't even think they know how they are 3-4-1. I feel like they are just the victim of bad luck. I really do. Now, good for them. Of their four losses, they've all came on the road. So unlike some seasons where they do bad at home, this is one of the seasons where they are doing great at home. And thankfully, they'll play a Cardinals team which has lost five straight games. That's right. This team started 2-0, and I said they were the biggest 2-0 frauds I've ever seen. Little did I know they were actually massive frauds. They have not won since September. It has been very, very bad. But they are well rested. You know, Kyler Murray's looking to finally return. I think Jacoby Brissett did well stepping in for him. But the Cowboys, they've been rolling. This is a great pick-me-up win at home. Give me the Cowboys over the Cardinals. And we'll say the final score will be 28-14. giving us a total of, was that 42? I'm trying to use my quick math. Yeah, I'm a college graduate. I can do math. You know it. But yeah, those are your NFL Week 9 quick predictions. Good stuff. Good stuff overall for this week. I think a lot of these matchups are going to be blowouts, if I'm being honest, and that's just my opinion. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see. I don't think my Vikings are going to do the best. But I'll tell you what I am going to do the best in, and that is my UFC predictions. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. We have a new week, new matchups now. Are any of these barn burners? No. No, but on these Apex cards, sometimes they're sneaky good. And to be honest, we've had more good Apex events this year than we have bad. So I do like our odds for this one being somewhat entertaining. We got 13 fights to get through. Let's drop our predictions for each and every one, as this has been my best year of making predictions since I began 5 years ago. So getting us started off, women's strawweight division, Talita Problem Child Alencar takes on Ariana Sorrisoso Carnelosi. Talita, 6-1-1. As for Ariana, 15-3. 1 inch in height for Ariana and 3 inches in reach as well, as Talita only has a 58-inch reach advantage, or not advantage, 58 inches in reach in general. Orthodox fighting stance for both these ladies. Talita's coming in -250 underdog. Ariana, or -250 favorite. I'm all over the place talking. Ariana Carnelosi is a +200 underdog in this one. So the favorite is Talita Alencar. She is 35 years old, if you'll believe it. From Brazil, but now fights and trains out of Florida. 3 subs of her 6 victories. She actually had a grappling match in June, so she has been staying active. But her last MMA fight in April on another Apex card. Picked up a decision win over Vanessa Dimopoulos. Was kind of whatever. She's gone 2-1. And the UFC, her only losses to Stephanie Luciano. And to be fair, Stephanie Luciano, I thought was ranked, but I guess I'm thinking of Luiana Santos. So, I mean, hasn't done much, if I'm being honest at all, in the UFC, but she gets it done in the grappling. At the end of the day, she's a grappler. She knows how to grapple, and that's going to be her game plan here when she takes on Ariana Carnelosi. Ariana Carnelosi, coming in, is 32 years old, also from Brazil, but did not move to the U.S. Of her 15 wins, 11 finishes, 9 KOs and 2 subs. Of her 3 defeats, she has been finished in 2 of them. She was originally supposed to fight in April of this year, but that fight fell apart. Instead, she has only fought in once since 2022. That's right, she had a fight in May of 2024 where she suffered a DQ loss. She was losing so badly to Pierre Rodriguez and was just given the biggest lucky headbutt ever. I mean, Pierre Rodriguez was dominating her and then just headbutts her on the ground. What are you doing? So she's technically gone 3-2 in the UFC. Only losses are to Lupi Godinez and Angela Hill. So odd. Really so odd. I think inactivity has hurt her, but these are the fights you guys really got to capitalize on. Talita Alencar may be better, but if I'm being honest, these women fights open the card, they always are 50-50, and at +200, hop on the Ariana Carnelosi train. Dare I say submission? Dare I say Talita is always just leaving herself open with submissions, just going for takedowns over and over, so could be a good opportunity here, but I really like Ariana Carnelosi as an underdog because you just never know with these women fights to open the card. Next up, men's welterweight division, as Phil the Fresh Prince Rowe, who's not as fresh as he used to be, as he's taking on Seok Hyung, the Korean Tyson Ko. That's right, his last name's KO, his nickname's the Korean Tyson. That's so tough. Phil Rowe, 11-5, Seok Hyung Ko, 12-2. Notable 4 inches in height, actually might be 5 for Phil Rowe, 6'3" to 5'10", and 9 inches in reach, 80 inches to 71. Orthodox stance for Rowe, southpaw for Ko. Wow. Wow, very notable here for Phil Rowe, who comes in as the +150 underdog as opposed to the -185 Seong Hyuk Ko. Phil Rowe, 35 years old, born in the Bronx, born in New York, now fights out of Orlando. Of his 11 wins, 7 KOs and 4 subs, a 100% finishing rate. Of his 5 defeats, he's only ever been finished once, and it was actually in his first ever professional fight. He's gone 4-3 in the UFC, and just, I think, has been the victim of tough matchups. I will say his 2021 loss to Gabe Green was abysmal, but after that went on a 2-3-fight knockout streak, including a knockout of Nico Price, then lost a bogus split decision to Neil Magny in 2023. I have no idea how they scored that for Neil Magny. Would come back in June of 2024 and lose to Jake Matthews. He did lose that. And then earlier this year, 2025, had one of the greatest comebacks I've seen against Angelusa. I mean, this was just insane. You know, round one, Angelusa dominates. grapples him to death. Round two, drops him. Angelusa staying on top of him. But then round three, Angelusa is so gassed. Phil Rowe is just, you know, keeping it together. And if you've seen the knockout, you probably have. Phil Rowe is holding up Angelusa's face, almost just like, literally like holding his face back, and is just beating him in. Just hook, 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 right to the jaw, right to the jaw, right to the jaw, knocks him out. So he's coming in off a very big win back at UFC Atlanta in June. And, you know, we'll just see if he can get it done. But, I mean, this boy's been averaging a fight, one fight a year the last 4 years. So it's good to see him getting two, but it's not against someone easy as he takes on the Korean Tyson, Sung Hook Ko. Ko is coming in 32 years old, 3 years younger from South Korea. Currently on a 5-fight winning streak of his 12 wins, 6 KOs. Both of his defeats, he was knocked out in. Funny enough, before he was coming into the UFC, he had been on a 3-fight KO streak. On season 8 of Daywise Quintero series, he defeated Igor Cavalcante by decision. And then when he debuted in June, picked up a dominant win over Obon Elliott. Just grappling him, though. 6 of 9 on takedowns, 10 minutes, 15 seconds of control time. He did what he had to do at UFC Baku, but it just wasn't exciting. I will say, you know, if Sung Hook Ko is looking for some more engagement, Phil Rowe is going to give it to him. But in terms of the height and reach, I've learned sometimes it matters in MMA, sometimes it doesn't. And in terms of this case, I really could see Phil Rowe getting it done as a plus 150 underdog, but I'm reminded by the fact that Angelusa dominated him in the grappling and almost knocked him out. So this ain't no Angelusa. I got Sung Hook Ko getting this done. Dare I say knocking out Phil Rowe? I can maybe see it, but certainly if he tunes up the grappling, it's going to go to Sung Hook Ko. Next up, another women's matchup for us today in the women's strawweight division again, as Elise Ardeline takes on Montserrat Canijo Ruiz. That's her full name, no nickname. Elise is coming in 10-7, and as for Montserrat, 10-4. 3 inches in height for Ardeline, and 1 inch in reach as well for southpaw for De Ruiz, and orthodox for Ardeline. Elise Ardeline is minus 420, Montserrat Ruiz plus 310. So Alice, Elise, however you say her name, she's coming in 33 years old from Romania, but now trains out of England. Of those 10 wins, she has 8 finishes, 4 KOs and 4 subs. Of her 7 defeats, she has been submitted twice. Fun fact, she actually fought Zhang Wei Li in 2016, way before her UFC days. Now, she was brutally knocked out in round 2, but that's not part of the point. She debuted in July of 2024, taking on Shauna Bannon, lost a split decision. Then took on Melissa Martinez in October 2024, lost unanimous decision, but then, for some reason, earlier in May, decided to have a fight of the night against Rayonna Dos Santos. I mean, it made no sense. These two went to absolute war on the prelims of easily probably the worst fight night, dare I say, event of the year, and they were the best part of it. I find that absolutely crazy. So Elise Ardeline is coming in with some momentum, especially coming in off the fight of the night, which she won. That's why she's the minus 420 favorite over the plus 310 underdog, Montserrat Ruiz. And Montserrat Ruiz, I have no idea if she's still in the company. I really don't. She's 32 years old, born in Mexico, and now fights out of El Paso, Texas. Of those 10 wins, 5 finishes, 2 KOs and 3 subs. Over 4 defeats, she's been knocked out 3 times. And funny enough, those have been all in the UFC. Debuted in 2021, wins a decision. Then Amanda Lemos knocks her out in 35 seconds. Then Jacqueline Amorim knocks her out with 17 seconds left in the fight. And then Edward Mora knocked her out in November of 2023 to make it better. Just grappled her to death. So no idea Montserrat Ruiz is still in the UFC. I'm actually very perplexed, but I could maybe see Ruiz getting this done. I'm going to be honest. When I look at the Talita Alencar Ariana Carnelosi fight, that's where I see an underdog winning. Here, I don't have anything for Ruiz. I mean, literally nothing. I remember Amanda Lemos knocking her out and just being like, how is this woman in the UFC? As for Ardeline, I watched her engage in one of the best women's fights of the year earlier in May. Gotta go with her. And speaking of women, we get our final women's matchup right here, and it is a big one, actually, in the women's bantamweight division. Like, I kid you not, this is actually a big fight in terms of rankings, as the number 3-ranked Ketlin Phenomenal Vieira takes on the number 4-ranked Norma the Immortal Dumont. Ketlin, 15-4, Norma, 12-2, 1 inch in height for Ketlin and 1 inch in reach as well. Orthodox stands for both of these ladies. Pretty even size-wise, plus 125 for Vera, minus 155 for Dumont. Odds makers have been kind of flip-flopping. This is a very even matchup. I mean, even as you can get in terms of the women's bantamweight division. Vera, 34 years old, is from Brazil. She has 6 of her 15 wins by finish, so kind of a decision machine, 2 KOs, 4 subs. She's only ever been finished once of her four defeats, and that was actually against Ariana Aldana with 9 seconds left back in 2019. Funny enough, she's actually like right below them ranked at number five. Actually, she might be at number six. Now that I'm thinking about it. Anyways, she's gone 8-2 in the UFC, and her last win was against Macy Chison back in May, but she was supposed to take on Hawkwell Pennington, who's ranked at number two at UFC Noche. Hawkwell pulled out, so unfortunately, Vieira had to push that off. Her fight against Macy Chison back in May was awful. It was awful. Macy Chison failed a takedown in every round. It just wound up being Caitlin Vieira controlling her. Like, it was so awful. Oh my gosh, it was so bad. So bad. I mean, Caitlin Vieira has kind of been the victim of boring fights her entire career. I mean, when she came into the UFC, you know, she went 5-1, got a finish, but also got finished. Since 2020, she's gone 4-3. I mean, nothing too bad. I mean, her last losses are to the number two, number five, and your current champion, Kayla Harrison, which was her last loss last October. But other than that, I mean, she's just kind of been boring. I mean, she did win main events against Miesha Tate and Holly Holmes, and I don't know if it's just me. I didn't score either of those fights for her, which I found hilarious, so Caitlin Vieira is coming in, and we'll see how she does against the immortal Norma Dumont. And somehow, Norma Dumont is actually a year younger at 35, which I always find very surprising. She is also from Brazil, and she rides a beautiful 5-fight winning streak. She has 2 subs in her entire career of her 12 wins, so a very big decision machine. And of her 2 defeats, she's only ever been finished once. And that was actually against Megan Anderson in 2020, which earned Megan Anderson a title shot, funnily enough, when she was then destroyed by Amanda Nunes. She has gone 8-2 in the UFC. She's actually, now that I've read this, I read this backwards. Guys, Caitlin Vieira has gone 9-4 in the UFC. Norma Dumont was the one scheduled to fight Hawkwell Pennington. It was actually Dumont who was supposed to be given a big shot, which makes a lot more sense. Wow, I didn't realize that. So it's actually Caitlin Vieira stepping in to fight. Interesting. Norma Dumont hasn't lost since May of 2022 when she lost to Macy Chison. But it's been a good run for so far. I mean, on this win streak, and no one too impressive, but Jermaine Duran to me, Irene Aldana in her last two, pretty good. Now, Dumont hasn't fought in a year and a month, I will say, so that may play an impact, but I could see Vieira pulling off the underdog win. She always does, but I am a Norma Dumont fan, and I'm riding with her until she gets a title shot or bust. And if she loses here, I'll happily admit I should have gone with Vieira. She might even be a better skillful fighter, but Dumont's 1-5 straight. I've seen good stuff from her. I don't think her run ends here. I think it ends up being a title shot against the winner of Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison, presumably Kayla Harrison at the end of the day. That's what I'm riding with. Next up, this one is insane. Who keeps giving him fights? Who keeps giving Cedric Dumas fights? It makes no sense. I hope this is the final fight this guy ever has in the UFC, because they are feeding the debuting man coming off of Damus Contreras series, Dante Lockjaw Johnson, against Cedric the Reaper Dumas. I have no idea how Dumas is in the UFC. We'll get to him in a second, but Dante, 6-0, Cedric, 10-3 with a no contest. A very insane 6-inch height advantage for Cedric, 6'2 to 5'8, and a 5-inch reach advantage as well, 79-74. But Dante was at an even bigger height disadvantage when he fought on the Contender Series, I might add. So Dante southpaw, Dumas is orthodox, and Dante Johnson, big fan of this guy. Minus 375 favorite, 26 years old, right across the border from a fellow Minnesotan in Wisconsin. 6 KOs, 6 wins, all in round one. This dude's a beauty. He really is. Got a minute knockout of a guy in Darian Abbey, who, mind you, is 6'2" as well, and he handled him pretty efficiently. Dante, I loved what I saw. He last fought August 26th, so I love the 2-month turnaround. It's really great to see, and they're feeding Cedric Dumas to this man because Cedric deserves to get knocked out. No idea how he's in the UFC, guys. I mean, we talk about this every time, but he's such a meme. He really is. 30 years old, plus 280 underdog from Pensacola, Florida. 4 KOs and 2 subs of his 6 victories. And all of his losses he's been finished in. And mind you, he has more arrests than he does professional MMA fights. He has, 14 professional fights, 17 arrests. Makes no sense to me. Dude came in 2023, submitted by a bum in Josh Fremm. Then beats Cody Brundage somehow. Then beats Abu Azatir. By the way, both decisions. Then gets knocked out by Nosuten Ruzboy from round one. Then somehow gets a win over Des Doolin. Then comes back April 2025 of this year, knocked out in under 3 minutes by Michael Lukajsic. Then fought at UFC Noche in Texas against Zachary Reese. and unfortunately kicked to the groin by Reese, and that's game over. That is game over, and Cedric Dumas escapes at the no contest. So funny. Just hilarious. So, I mean, I have nothing to really say here. Dante Johnson, round one knockout. This is what it's set up to be. If Cedric Dumas wins, Cedric Dumas is the new Cody Brundage, since I'm pretty sure they cut Cody Brundage. It's ridiculous. Dante Johnson, there's a lot to this guy. He fought on heavyweight on the Contender Series, knocked out a heavyweight. And they're like, you can cut way more weight, come down to middleweight. Exactly what he's doing. So Dante Johnson, every day of the week, go get that boy Cedric. I need you to put his lights out. I think I've been saying this backwards, though. Like, I really want Dante to win. I feel like I've been saying I'm feeding him to Cedric. No. Cedric is being fed to Dante Johnson. Next up, from middleweight to bantamweight, Timmy Twilight Kwamba is back against Chang Ho Lee. Kwamba is 9-3. Chang Ho Lee is 11-1. 5'9 to 5'8. 1 inch in height for Timmy and 2 inches in reach as well. 71 inches to 69. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. -135 for Timmy, +110 for Chang Ho Lee. The odds makers have this as close as you can get. Timmy Kwamba, 26 years old from Las Vegas, has 5 of his 9 wins by KO, and of his 3 defeats, he's only ever been submitted once. Came into the UFC in 2024, lost 2 decisions, but then, April 2025, lands one of the best flying knee knockouts of the year over Roberto Romero, and I think a lot of people are sleeping on Timmy in this fight. Not giving him a chance, he proved us all wrong, running through Roberto Romero. What a great win, too. Back at UFC Kansas City. Great win for Timmy, and it turned his entire luck around because here he is back again, 26 years old, 9-3 record, and he has a really good chance, I'd say, against the 31-year-old Chang Ho Lee. Now, Chang Ho is 11-1 and is currently on a 5-fight winning streak. Similar to the Korean Tyson Chung Hyuk Ko, he is from South Korea. Of his 11 wins, he has 7 finishes, 5 KOs, and 2 subs, and this man is coming off a performance bonus earlier the year in April. Dominated Cortavius Romeus before that, had won the road to the UFC season 2, and he'd been on a tear on that as well, getting round 1 knockouts, round 3 knockouts. Chang Ho Lee has been the man, and as a South Korean fan, I just love the South Korean fighters. I'm going with Chang Ho Lee, a +110 underdog. This is where you get those sneaky underdogs, because I mean, let's not judge Timmy Kwamba for beating, you know, Roberto Romero. He's not going to be a world beater, but Chang Ho Lee, he hasn't lost in a while. He's been fighting like crazy, and I think he gets it done here. I really do. Chang Ho Lee over Timmy Kwamba. I think Timmy might be, you know, a bit quick to start coming off of such a beautiful win back in April. I think Chang Ho Lee takes advantage of that, takes him down, TKOs or submits him. That's what Chang Ho Lee is going to do all day of the week. Next up, light heavyweight division as Billy, son of Susie Ella, kind of sounds like a serial killer nickname, takes on Kevin Christian. That's right, the double first name, Kevin Christian. Billy is 8-2. Kevin is 9-2. Kevin is a 6'7" light heavyweight. Wow, taking on the 6'3" Billy Elekana. 80-inch reaches for Kevin, 77-inch reaches for Billy. Southpaw for Billy Elekana, orthodox for Kevin Christian. Wow. Did not realize Kevin had that big of a height advantage for him. Billy is at -230. Kevin is a +180 underdog. Billy Elekana is 30 years old from Las Vegas. 3 KOs and 1 sub give him a 50% finishing rate. And his only loss in the UFC, short notice fight to Bogdan Guskov, who he almost finished in round 1. Let's not forget that. Now, he did ultimately get finished in round 2, but came back in July, defeated Ibel Azlan. Was the fight awful? Yes, but he beat Ibel Azlan. Still a good name to have on your record. Billy, you know, he's kind of been a short-notice fighter so far. Happy he's getting his third fight of the year in the UFC. And we'll see how he does against the debuting Kevin Christian. Kevin Christian is from Brazil, currently riding a 6-fight winning streak. 8 wins of his 9 have come by finish, 3 KOs and 5 subs. Both of his defeats, he has been finished in. Now, he fought on Season 8 of Dana White's Contender Series, getting around to triangle armbar when he was getting out grappled. Very cool to see. I don't know much about this, but Kevin Christian being a +180 underdog against a guy in Billy Elekana who's -230, who allowed Billy Elekana to get in here at -230? I have no idea, but Kevin Christian, he's 6'7". We're keeping the meme alive. Give me Kevin Christian. My cousin's name is Kevin. I don't know a single Billy. Actually, I think one of my college buddy's roommate's name is Billy, but I mean, I'm going with Kevin Christian. He's got the height advantage, more of a finisher, and as far as I can tell, I can't tell much, but I think he's going to be good. We'll see how it goes. I'm going with Kevin Christian. I got to sprinkle in some underdogs here and there. Next up, Catch weight, 130 pounds. Alan Puro Oso Nascimento takes on custom-made Cody Durden. Alan is 21-6. Cody is 17-8-1. 1 inch in height for Alan and 2 inches in reach as well. Southpaw for Durden, orthodox for Alan Nascimento. Durden, plus 180, is stepping in on short notice to take on the minus 125, Alan Nascimento. Thank you very much, Durden. Saving the day after Rafael Estevan pulled out. So coming in this one, Alan Nascimento is on a 3-fight winning streak. He is from Brazil, of course, trains at the same gym as the late, great Charles Oliveira. I don't know why I said late. He is still great. That is actually hilarious I said that. I apologize. But yeah, dude, he's been on absolute tear. 21 wins, 17 finishes, 1 KO, 16 subs, never been finished of his 6 defeats. Alan Nascimento has been super good. Only losses in the UFC: Raulin Paiva on Dana White's Contender Series Brazil Season 1, and Tiger Lambekov in 2021. 2022, beat Jake Hadley, first man to beat him. 2023, beat Carlos Hernandez. Everyone's beating Carlos Hernandez. But then, May of this year, beat Rafael Filho, who is a tough guy to beat. Super, super tough. So, Alan Nascimento was supposed to take on an undefeated guy. Instead, he is taking on Cody Durden on short notice. This is a flyweight matchup, but it is being contested at the, 130-pound catch weight. So, shout out to Cody Durden. And Durden, man, what a dog. Really, what a dog. 34 years old from Georgia. 12 of his 17 wins are by finish. 6 KOs and 6 subs. Of his 8 defeats, he has been finished 6 times. Unfortunately, he is 1-4 in his last 5 and has lost his last 2 fights. Now, Cody's been a dog. What can I say? I mean, he fought Chris Gutierrez back in 2020, short notice. Fought Jimmy Flick. Beat Al Gorquin. Lost to Muhammad Boykayev in 58 seconds. Went on a 4-fight winning streak, which led him to Tiger Lambekov, who beat him. Then he fought Bruno Silva, was beating him, then got knocked out, but then submitted Machnow, September 2024, then got his booty whooped by Joshua Van in December 2024, fought in June where he was brutally knocked out by Jose Ochoa. I just want to say, that was hilarious. I mean, dude, he was like ready to go, he's like pounding his chest, at 11 seconds, it just gets clipped with a beautiful combo and out like a light. So, sorry to say it, Cody Durden has potential to pull off the upset, but I'm riding with Alan Nascimento, getting another submission win on his record. I just think he's game and ready for this victory here. It just makes sense to me. Next up, welterweight division, Charles Chuck Buffalo Radke is back. Finally back as he takes on Daniel Frunza. Charles is 10-5, Daniel is 9-3, 6'1 to 5'9, some height for Daniel Frunza, and I guess an inch in reach, 73 to 72, but both men fight in the orthodox fighting position. Charles is coming in minus 145, Daniel plus 115. Oddsmakers have this a bit closer than I would have figured. Radke is 35 years old from Wisconsin. 7 of his 10 wins are by finish, 5 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 5 defeats, he's been knocked out 3 times. And despite being 1-2 in his last 3, I mean, his losses are to Carlos Prates and Mike Mallett. Let's not act like his knockout losses are to the number 15 and number 9 guys in the rankings. His last win was in November 2024, where he knocked out Matthew Sammelsberger in 51 seconds. Before that, his other UFC win knocked out Gilbert Urbina in round 1. So Charles Radke has power, and I almost feel like when they feed these lower-level guys like Daniel Frunza to him, he eats him up for breakfast and gets the knockout. Now, Daniel Frunza, I hate to say it, I'm a little confused how he's getting another shot in the UFC. So, 31 years old from Romania, but now fights and trains out of Italy. 8 of his 9 wins are by KO. All 3 of his losses he's been finished in. And he had an awful debut against Rhys McKee in April. I mean, Rhys dropped him 3 times. This is Rhys McKee we're talking about, by the way. And then beat his face up so bloody he couldn't continue. And I understand he pulled off a little, like, upset comeback on the Contender Series last season and Season 8, but I don't know. Don't really see it at all. So, Charles Radke may only be a slight favorite, but I think he's getting another round one knockout here. I mean, Daniel Frunza, I don't know if you were just hiding something. I don't know if Rhys McKee just caught you off guard, but I saw nothing from you last time. So give me Charles Radke all day, round one knockout. That's what I'm feeling. Next up, final 4 fights, featherweight division, as the Midwest Choppa is back. Isaac Dalgarian is here to take on the Cuban problem, Yadier Del Valle. This is such a high-level matchup, guys. For unranked featherweights, they have cooked with this matchup. Isaac, 7-1, Yadier, 9-0. 2 inches in height for Yadier, 2 inches in reach for Isaac. Southpaw for Del Valle, orthodox for Dalgarian. And Isaac is coming in minus 200. Yadier Del Valle, the Cuban problem, coming in plus 155. Isaac Dalgarian is 29 years old from Missouri. Of his 7 wins, 7 finishes, 4 KOs and 3 subs. His only defeat, a split decision to Christian Rodriguez in March of 2024. Now, Isaac has gotten all of his wins in round one, except his last one against Brendan Morote. That was in September of 2024. He's a really good grappler. I'll say that. His grappling is off the charts. And when he lost to Christian Rodriguez, I was actually a little perplexed by that one. I know Christian Rodriguez is the prospect killer, which I guess he's kind of lost that moniker as of late. We'll have to see if he regains it. But look, he should have won that fight on my scorecards. And other than that, he's just dismantled Francis Marshall, Brendan Morote, anyone low level. Isaac Dalgarian has been a problem. But the real issue he's going to deal with is the Cuban problem. Yadier de Villel, a 9-0 undefeated fighter out of Cuba. The 29-year-old now trains out of Texas. Of his 9 wins, 2 KOs, and 3 subs. He won on Season 8 of Dana White's Contender Series, and when he debuted earlier this year in May, made quick work of Connor Matthews getting a 3-minute submission. So, I don't know what to expect here, guys. I'm going to be honest. You're going to see which guy is better. And when you see which one guy is better, that's just going to tell you where they're going to go from here. Because Dalgarian is 7-1 with a very debatable split decision loss. Yadier is 9-0 and has been kind of untested. But I think Yadier being plus 155 could be a good underdog. But I think Isaac Dalgarian is super good. I could really see this guy make it to the rankings eventually. Both these guys are 29. Both of them are young. But I am going to go with Dalgarian. I don't know if this is going to win fight of the night. But when you watch this, you are going to see such high-level fighting, I feel, from two young guys who are so hungry in their prime that you're going to be super impressed. So the Midwest choppa over the Cuban problem. And it makes sense because I'm from the Midwest. I need to root for a fellow Midwesterner when he's in the UFC. Next up, third to last matchup, as Jeremiah Wells is here to take on the answer, Themba Gorimbo. 12-4-1 for Jeremiah Wells as his professional MMA record. Themba is 14-5. 3 inches in height for Themba, actually 4, 5'9" to 6'1". And 3 inches in reach, 77-74. Switch stance for Wells, orthodox for Themba Gorimbo. Wells is coming in plus 120. Themba, the answer, minus 150 favorite. Let's start with Jeremiah Wells, because this man, honestly, I'm impressed he's still fighting. 38 years old from Philadelphia. 9 of his 12 wins by finish, 5 KOs and 4 subs. He was supposed to fight on June 1st, 2024. Did not end up fighting. He was supposed to fight May 31st of this year. He did not end up fighting. This man's last fight was February 2024 when he lost a split decision. So it is very crazy that the last time that this guy fought, he was 36 years old and now he's already almost 39 years old. Pretty funny how that works. He is on a 2-fight losing streak. His last win was in 2023. And the one thing I've learned from Jeremiah Wells, he doesn't really have a chin. You know, I know he knocked out Walray Alvarez and Court McGee, but that was 3 and 4 years ago, and those guys are old and didn't have chins. Jeremiah Wells, I don't know what to say, is a very grapple-heavy style when it comes to his fighting, and at 38 years old, being inactive for over a year and a half, I don't like your odds, especially when you take on a guy in Themba Gorimbo who is always hunting for the finish. So Themba Gorimbo, of course, 34 years old, from Zimbabwe, moved to Florida. 8 of his wins are by finish, 2 KOs and 6 subs. Of his 5 defeats, he's been finished 4 times. And he is, of course, the fighter who The Rock gave a house to. How about that? After debuting in 2023, he suffered an unfortunate guillotine choke loss. He followed it up 4 straight wins, including a big one over Ramiz Ramos. Very impressive. Knocking out Pete Rodriguez in 32 seconds. His last win, October 2024, he beat Nico Price. Now, he did take on Vicente Luque to end off 2024. And if I'm being honest, it's just skill gap. You know, Vicente Luque is just much, much better than Themba Gorimbo, but the fact he was able to get that opportunity shows the UFC thinks he has some ability, and as in terms of Jeremiah Wells, I just don't see much with him. I hate to be mean. I really hate to be mean, but I'm sorry. 38 years old, turns 39 Friday. I'm going to go with Themba Gorimbo to put him away. Now, as an underdog, could be pretty good. You know, there's some potential there, but I am going to go with Themba Gorimbo. Not even going to sugarcoat around it. Give me Themba Gorimbo. Then with that, ladies and gentlemen, we get into the 2 big fights of the night. And a lot of people have mixed reviews, but I'm going to take the optimistic approach and think that we are going to be seeing 2 future title contenders on today's episode of the Suppression Podcast on Watching UFC. And that is Ante Delage at number 9, taking on the number 6 ranked Waldo Cortez Acosta. So for this heavyweight contest, alrighty. Coming in, Waldo, of course, Salsa Boy, 14-2. Ante, walking trouble, Delage, 26-6. Big experience differential. 1 inch in height for Waldo, 6'4" to 6'3". Both men have a 78-inch reach advantage, or both men have a 78-inch reach, no advantage either way. Orthodox fighting position for both of these guys. Waldo, minus 145, Ante, plus 115. I did see the odds have been shifting back and forth. No one can decide. Waldo, 34 years old from Arizona, the number 6 ranked man, has 7 of his 14 wins by finish, 6 KOs and 1 sub, and this will be his fourth fight of 2025. He's done pretty good. Came off of season 6 of Dana White's Contender Series. He's gone 7-2 in the UFC. First loss was in April of 2023, a decision loss. Last time he fought in August was a decision loss to Sergey Pavlovich. And this man holds wins over Ryan Spann, Sergey Spivak, even Robel Stepanek he beat. He was the last man to beat Andrei Arlovsky, I'm pretty sure. You know what? Not too shabby, but his two finishes in the UFC are both over natural light heavyweights, which I just don't really like. And especially watching the Sergey Pavlovich fight, you know, that fight was awful. That really was. And Waldo has yet to fight someone who's really gotten in his face, really has actually came for him with the knockout power. And that's where I think he's going to run into some trouble against the former PFL world champion, Ante Delage, the best friend of Tom Aspinall, the 35-year-old from Croatia, is currently on a 2-fight winning streak. Of his 26 wins, 19 finishes, 12 KOs, 7 subs. Of his 6 defeats, he's been finished 5 times. He went 8-3 in the PFL. He has also gone 1-0 in KSW, 1-0 in Rizin. This man has fought all around the globe and is just phenomenal. He really is. Ante Delage is great. Last time he fought, his UFC debut in September, 2-minute knockout of Marcin Tybura. Just stayed in his face, blitzed him, hitting him with great punches. He has the power. He has the pressure. And if need be, he didn't even need to show it against Tybura. He has the grappling. I am a Waldo Cortez Acosta. I don't want to say hater. I just never pick him. I just don't. He's kind of on my no-pick list. And as for Ante Delage, I'm hype. You come into the UFC after fighting all around the globe. You get a 2-minute knockout over the number 10 guy in the world. Yeah, we're going to get hype for you. So Ante Delage, round one knockout of Waldo Cortez Acosta, catching him off guard, knocking him out. That's my prediction. That's what I hope happens as well. Give it to me. Feed it to me. Sorry, salsa boy. It's time for you to walk into trouble with Ante Delage. His nickname's Walking Trouble. I like what I did there. I had a little bit of a transition. I'm a great transitioner, you would say, as we move into our main event. Minus 115, minus 105. No one can decide. No one can choose their favorite for this main event, as, of course, the number 12 ranked David Onama takes on. Actually, number 12 ranked Steve Garcia takes on the number 13th ranked David Onama. Mean machine, Steve Garcia, 18-5. David Onama, no nickname yet, 14-2. 6 foot to 5'11, 1 inch for Steve. 75 inches to 74, 1 inch for Garcia. Southpaw for Steve, orthodox for David Onama. The matchmaker's cooked here, I might say, and the best part is when Steve Garcia won his last matchup over Calvin Kattar, he called for an Apex main event against someone. Now, he called out Yusuf Zalal. Yusuf would, of course, get a matchup against Josh Emmett, capitalize. He's now ranked number 7, but the David Onama fight was the next best option. And last time Steve lost, I was in my second year of college, funny enough. Steve Garcia is 33 years old from New Mexico and rides a 6-fight winning streak. Of those 18 wins, 14 of them are by knockout. Of his, you know, his 5 defeats, he's been finished twice, but that was back when he was green, when he was young, and he didn't know what to do. The wins on this winning streak: Chase Hooper, Shailene Nurdambeek, Melkus Acosta, Sungwoo Choi, Kyle Nelson, Calvin Kattar. The Calvin Kattar, Kyle Nelson, Chase Hooper, and Melkus Acosta have all aged so well. Of those 6 wins, 5 knockouts, including 4 in round number 1. Last time out against Calvin Kattar, literally tried everything he could, but I think Calvin Kattar is unfinishable. I got to give that to Calvin. His time in the UFC is dwindling, but, you know, he really hung in there with Steve Garcia and ate some incredible shots. And I could kind of tell at the end, Steve Garcia was holding back a bit because he knew Calvin Kattar packed a punch. And even though he dropped him and almost got him out of there, you know, even when he was wobbled, he didn't want to catch a punch coming in. But Steve Garcia, super high on him. Having been a 33-year-old prospect is never easy, but Amin Zahabi is turning 38 this year, and this man is now a top 10 bantamweight, so I don't want to hear any of that talk. Steve Garcia, really high on him, and we'll see how he does against David Onama, another one of my favorites. But, I mean, one man's going to have to go down. And we'll see who it is. Now, David Onama is 31 years old, born in Uganda, now trains out of Kansas City, which is kind of funny. He got his win over Giga Chikadze to get into the rankings back in UFC Kansas City in April. Currently on a 4-fight winning streak, 11 of his 14 wins are by finish, 7 KOs, 4 subs. Of his 2 defeats, never been finished. Lost to Mason Jones in his debut, lost to Nate Landwehr in 2022. So neither of these guys have lost since 2022. Kind of crazy that they're someone's got to go, but he knocked out Gabriel Santos in 2023, beat Jocelyn Pierce in 2024, beat Roberto Romero in 2024, and of course beat Giga Chikadze a couple months ago. But all I know is I'm picking Steve Garcia. I am very high on Steve Garcia, and I love David Onama, and he could easily mix it up, but just from what I've seen from these guys in the UFC, I think David Onama has a tendency to gas out. I've kind of seen it, and from what I've seen from Steve Garcia, he hasn't been to round 3 much, but when he did it against Calvin Kattar, never was breathing heavy. If anything, he was holding back, and this man can clearly go 5 rounds, so I will be surprised if this goes past round 3. I'm going to be honest, and if this goes to round 4, which I might just mix it up for this prediction, I got Steve Garcia a very early, dare I say, under a minute round 4 knockout to open up the round. That's what I think is going to happen. I think Steve Garcia is truly built for this. I really do. I really think Steve Garcia is going to be a name that is going to be in main events in 2026, like higher profile main events. And especially whoever wins this is going to get a big opportunity. The winner of this is going to be getting your Josh Emmett, your Brian Ortega's, your Arnold Allen's, your Aljamain Sterling, Leon Murphy's next, whoever loses out of those two. That's going to be what the winner of this gets. So like I was saying, I think you're going to see 2 future title challengers on this card, and it's either going to be the winner of Waldo Cortez Acosta and Ante Delage, which I think is going to be Ante, and it's either going to be the winner of Steve Garcia or David Onama, which I think is going to be Steve Garcia. So those are your UFC Vegas 110 predictions. You know, I'm going to be honest, it's a pretty rough card. It really is, but if you're a diehard UFC fan like me, you know, you don't have to sit in front of the TV and watch it. Go out. I'm going to be with my girlfriend. I'm going to be in downtown Chicago. I'm still going to be watching it on my phone. I'm still going to be checking in on it, but, you know, this isn't a pay-per-view. Especially after watching UFC 321, I would take a little break from just sitting down and watching straight UFC because it can get pretty mind-numbing. But these next two Apex events, tune in for a couple of the fights. You get Qatar, you get UFC 322, you get UFC 323. We are ending the year on such a high, and we'll see how UFC Vegas 112 goes. I think they're going to try and load up that Apex card. Everyone who hasn't had a fight this year is going to try and get on the final 2 December cards of the year, so stay tuned for that. But yeah, let me know what you guys are thinking about Saturday night's main event, about week 9 of the NFL, where we should go with the rankings in the UFC, and yeah, UFC Vegas 110, let me know what you guys are going with. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, you guys have a fantastic Halloween weekend. Stay safe out there. I know a lot of you are degenerates, and I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.